morning, everyone, and welcome to I Take Bravo Very Seriously. Happy Thursday, and this is with me, your host, Dana Mandel. I have some news to share in that I am not having the best day with my mental health, or the best few days, to be honest with you. That being said, I have a schedule, and I always promise to get you out an episode, but I just am not feeling my best self. So despite the fact that there's quite a bit to cover, I'm going to keep this episode just a little bit shorter than normal and hopefully get back to regularly scheduled programming in the next few days if I'm feeling better. But I just wanted to let you guys know that right now. I also wanted to let you guys know something kind of funny, which was that, you know, every week I'm always saying, hey guys, you know, if you don't mind leaving me a review, I'd really appreciate it. And I never saw any, and you know, it is what it is. And sometimes no news is good news, and that's totally fine too, right? Like, I've only had this podcast a couple of months. But, you know, it's still, yeah, I've been reaching out to you guys and saying, like, you know, give me some feedback, because I wasn't sure if you guys, like, hate it, or, you know, I just wanted to know if anyone was into it. And so when you sign up with Apple Podcasts, which you have to do if you have a podcast, you have, like, an Apple Podcast account. And within that account, you can see, like, different analytics than you can see typically, like, not just how many people have downloaded episodes, but you can also see how many people have listened to episodes. So there's just like sort of different analytics in there. And within there, I saw something about ratings and reviews. I'm like, what is this? So apparently Apple Podcasts does not allow you to see ratings and reviews outside of the country that you live in. And so because I live in Canada and there's no reviews from Canada, to me, when I look at my Apple Podcast reviews, it looks like I don't have any reviews. But when I go into my account, you can select it by country and it'll show if you have any reviews based on other countries. And when I looked at US, there was lots of reviews and they were positive. And I was so, so happy to hear that. So guys, I'm so appreciative of the feedback. It means so much to me. And you know, because I just wanted to know that whether you guys were even liking it, whether I was going in the right direction. You know, this is for you guys as much as it is for me. So thank you so much for everyone who has left a review. It really does mean the world to me. And I'm so happy that I found them hiding away there in Apple Podcasts, being that little seedy monster that it is. All right, but let's get into the episode, guys.
He's a f***ing battered wife. Look at him.
So I know we typically cover Rachel Goes Rogue, and she went super rogue last week and released two episodes, but I did cover one of them for you in last week's episode. Then she released another episode, and this was with therapist Melissa Reich, who is so amazing, such a good friend of mine, and she did such an amazing job on this episode acting in the role of a therapist. So as you guys know, and as I've mentioned many times, Rachel has had many therapists on her episode. She's tried out a few different formats. Usually the therapist format is not my favorite because I just, you know, that's just not what I'm into. I'm more, as I've mentioned before, I'm more into just like pop culture podcasts, but I obviously listened because my friend Melissa was on it, and the episode was about grooming, and so there's like a lot of talk about that. So if you want to listen to more about that and to understand what it is and definitions and that kind of thing, definitely go and listen to the episode. I'm definitely not going to go into that due to the nature of it, and again, this is a pop culture podcast itself, right? So I'm just going to go into the things that I think are sort of important to Vanderpump Rules. But it was interesting that Rachel has said that she's sort of taken looks back and has sort of felt like there was a lot of isolation in her relationship with Tom. And she found that, like, basically from the point of when they first kissed to when she broke down in her final interview, she was keeping secrets and she had all of that isolation during that period of time. She said that he was allowed to tell some friends, but she wasn't allowed to tell any, which I forgot about and I didn't really think about, actually, because yeah, Kyle Chan knew, there was Tom Schwartz, a myriad of Joe, myriad of other people knew, but Rachel was the one having to keep it like more isolated than anybody else. And Melissa said something really interesting here. She said, someone who truly loves you is never going to ask you to keep their secrets. It's a huge red flag. And I just love that, and so I just really wanted to quote it because I really just thought that was interesting. Another interesting thing that Rachel said was that, you know, sometimes Tom would try and push her boundaries where he would also try and push Ariana's boundaries. So she gave an example where she said where all three of them would be in the same environment and Tom would start to like massage Rachel or like massage her feet and act like it was completely normal in front of Ariana, and Ariana wouldn't say anything. So for Rachel, she was like, I guess it feels like it's okay because Ariana isn't saying anything, but maybe he's pushing both of our boundaries. So she just sort of felt like he was trying to do like these little things to see like how she'd react, but also to see how Ariana would react. And she says that really things really changed for her when they went to Coachella, because that's when he became a lot more attentive towards her. She also said something about, like, how he had brought, like, non-nicotine cigarettes and that he would light them for her. And she thought that maybe this was something that he did just for her so that they could have, like, this very, like, intimate moment. Like, her therapist said that smoking is a very intimate type of activity. I'm not really sure about that one. I don't know. Like, it's totally possible. And again, what Melissa really says in this episode is, like, your feelings are valid, so you're allowed to, like, feel whatever you want to feel. But when it comes to, like, all the things we've been talking about, like, about whether Ariana knew and that kind of thing, like, I don't think she knew they were having an affair. But I can definitely see why Rachel was confused. And the more I listen to her episodes, the more I realize that. Because, yeah, if there's slowly this sort of behavior where, you know, there's, like, sexual contact and, like, Ariana's not saying anything, maybe Ariana is cool with it and there could be some confusion there. And then she mentions this thing in the previous episode about this December 2022 thing where they were being handsy, right? And Ariana told them to stop. So, I don't know. It seems like Ariana had seen a bunch of things and had said something sometimes and not said something other times. I mean, I can't even imagine being in a woman in a relationship like that. I could totally see myself being uncomfortable and, like, not saying something because I'm so uncomfortable in the situation and I sort of don't know what to do. I don't know. I mean, like, it's just interesting. And I feel like in every episode she releases, like, a little bit more of these tidbits about, like, you know, what happened during that relationship. And I don't know. There is something that Ariana said in an interview that I don't remember where it was, like GMA or something like that, but she said, like, not everyone will never know everything about Scandal. And I think maybe, and I've always sort of thought, like, wondered what she meant by that, and I wonder if maybe she means, you know, like, what she really knew about what was going on inside her own relationship. Anyway, that's it for Rachel Goes Rogue.
Summer should be fun. Mena, not fun.
Okay, so let's get into Summer House. So I'm gonna, again, I just don't want to go into too much detail. It's not even, like, what I want to do anyways. I mean, when I initially started doing this podcast, I told you guys that I wanted it to be more so, you know, not like a line-by-line recap, and I do find myself doing that sometimes. So especially today, since I'm not feeling my best, I want to try to avoid doing that and just talk about, like, some of the major themes we're seeing here. But at the same time, I mean, it's also interesting that basically one of the first scenes that we're getting is Carl and Lindsay getting to the summer house first that weekend, and Lindsay going outside to rest, and then Carl joining her, and he's like, babe, hang out with me. And then we have Lindsay telling the camera that it's almost like they're in COVID times because Carl doesn't have a 9-to-5 job, so that's, like, they're all on top of each other all the time. And she's like, people need, like, space to miss each other, so she's just sort of like, hi, and eye roll. But, like, you know, while not untrue, I totally understand what she's saying. Like, it's comments like this where I feel like she's harboring resentment towards him with this, and, like, with that comment that she made about, like, him being a motivational speaker last week, where she was like, oh, I think we'd have to work on some things there first, but okay. And that comment that she made to Danielle about, like, oh, you're probably being more fed than me. I mean, these are all these little things where, again, so close to the time when you're supposed to be getting married seems like odd. And also, if you think about it, they've actually only been in a relationship for 2 years. So they were together for a year and then got engaged last summer, and then this breakup happened this past summer. So, you know, while I understand that you're sort of on top of each other, at the same time, you've only been together 2 years, you're getting married soon, you should probably still be in your honeymoon phase. So it seems very strange that she's really feels, I mean, you can literally feel the tension cut through, like, it literally, I feel it through the TV. I feel it very tense when they speak with each other, quite frankly, or when Lindsay speaks about Carl to the camera, and that's the person she's supposed to be marrying, right? It's just wild. So West is talking about how much he was sweating on his date with Sierra, and I totally feel that. I am, like, the sweatiest person on earth, and when I used to go on dates, I would always be worried that they could feel my sweat through my jean jacket when they were hugging me, and that's literally why I don't go on dates anymore. So that's totally fair. But at the same time, that man was wearing, like, a black mesh shirt, right? So he was wearing something that, like, could air him out the most he possibly could. Unfortunately, I could not get away with that on a date, for sure. So then Carl and Kyle are talking outside, and Kyle says that he and Amanda had actually gone to a wedding during the week, and he finds the weddings to be like another form of therapy for him, because he says the officiant was talking about the work you need to put into a marriage, and then like he and Amanda just sort of squeeze each other's hands. And Carl told Kyle that he brought up the idea of a sober sports bar to Lindsay, and she said no, and he said that it had made him feel bad. And he had talked about doing things in sobriety or mental health space, and that she shut him down, too. She had said that he was pigeonholing himself. So now I feel like we're getting a little more information here, because from last week, I was sort of on Lindsay's side, only on that one part, obviously. Obviously, I'm not on Lindsay's side on any other respect, but I was just sort of like, okay, man, like, you've been unemployed for a year, you've spent all this money trying to, like, figure out what you want to do, you're getting married soon, like, get it together, right? But now I'm hearing a little bit differently. Now it seems like when Carl proposes ideas to Lindsay, she shuts them down. So we saw the sober sports bar idea. I thought that was a one-off from last week, and now apparently he was talking about doing stuff with sobriety or mental health, and she shut that down too. So it seems like from Lindsay, it sounded like he had a million ideas and he couldn't pick one, but from Carl, it's actually sounding more like he has career ideas, but Lindsay is shutting him down. And Kyle says, it's like, you know, but you guys should be able to have a convo about it without just, like, it shutting down. And Carl's like, I just don't feel like Lindsay is listening to what's important to me. Now, this date is July 14th, 2023. The wedding is supposed to be on November 17th, 2023. And Carl is saying, I don't think my fiance is listening to what's important to me. And I just cannot get over this period of time, the fact that this is the period of time that we are talking about. You know what I mean? You're looking at a couple that just seems so in a bad place, not in the same space, not on the same page, not even liking each other, and they're just so close to getting married, and it's just such a weird thing to be able to sort of watch back. Love to watch it back, obviously, but it's so weird. So they all get dressed up to go to dinner. Lindsay says it's martini vibes, and obviously she starts drinking, as Lindsay does. Amanda and Carl are being, like, totally cute with each other, and Lindsay decides to give a toast, and she says something like, Kyle says something like, have you heard Carl's bark? And she's like, I don't want to hear it, otherwise I might have to give the ring back. And then it was, like, dead silence, because she's just making this, like, quip for, like, sort of no reason. It's like these little jabs when they're not necessary. Like, sure, some couples have, like, little, you know, insulting, sarcastic jokes that they have at each other, but that wasn't this moment, right? So it was just, again, just this very tense moment. Sierra tells Jesse that Craig is coming next weekend, and it had come up that he had touched Paige's leg, and Jesse tells the camera that he's not going to push himself, like, on a girl who has a boyfriend, and, like, good, because I was really not liking this guy. Like, stop touching Paige's leg, and, you know, respect the fact that Craig is coming soon. Our big man Craig was probably going to beat you up, JK, JK. So the whole crew goes out except for Amanda, and then we see at 11:52 Carl coming in by himself, and then shortly after you see Lindsay coming in by herself, and Amanda comes down the stairs with zit cream all over her face, and I just love Amanda. She's just so real. She's the realist. And so Carl tells the camera that so they had gotten into the car to go home from dinner, because he was tired, and Lindsay started in on him, saying, like, what's wrong? You're acting different. And he's like, Lindsay, I'm just tired, and she wouldn't let it go. And then she said, how many drinks have you had? And then she said, what do you want? And so, again, this is, like, another weekend in a row where she's asking him what he's on. And she says, he says, I'm not on anything, and she says, you're a liar. He says to the camera that he's shaking because he's so hurt and it's not okay. So there's, like, this scene of, like, them basically fighting in the bedroom, and he's saying, I'm not on anything. Lindsay says, you do smoke weed, and he said, yes, but not tonight. And Lindsay said, you're the biggest gaslighter I've ever met. You're like Sandoval. And I really think she's maybe wanting to get her Ariana moment here and, like, didn't get it, because, like, this is not the first time she's mentioned, like, Ariana or Sandoval, and it just felt very out of place and very produced, calculated, whatever, and irrelevant to this conversation, quite frankly. So then Lindsay tells Amanda what's going on, and her version of the story is that they were in the car, and Carl started picking at her, and she was like, why are you being this aggressive with me? And then he started switching the narrative and was like, you've been drinking. And then she was like, that's fair because, like, I mean, like, that's sort of not fair because, like, she's been drinking, right? And a person who has been drinking has no right to speak on somebody else's sobriety. And then Lindsay tells Amanda that Carl jumped out of the car, and she says that Carl has a lot of demons, and there's, like, this Jekyll Hyde situation, and that she's the only one on Earth who has ever seen his bad side. Okay, so how on Earth is she the only one who has ever seen it? Or is she just the one who brings it out? And I don't even mean that in a negative way about Lindsay necessarily. Like, I dated someone where we definitely brought out the worst in each other. Like, I cried during that relationship. It was a 2-year relationship. I cried, like, literally almost every day of that relationship. And afterwards, I dated someone else who, you know, I had a good time with and made me happy. And I had mentioned to my ex, because we had become friends again, like, later on in life, that, you know, the person I dated after, you know, he'd never seen me cry. And my ex was like, how is that possible? I'm like, because I was happy in that relationship. Like, he didn't make me cry. And my ex considered me somebody who, like, cried all the time. And it was, like, part of my personality, when it actually wasn't part of my personality. It was part of our relationship because we were so toxic together and not right for each other. And so that's what it brought out in me. And I 100% believe that Carl and Lindsay bring out the absolute worst in each other. So, I mean, we've seen Lindsay where, like, she's picking at him and she won't let things go, and he's the one being very calm, being very cool, very collected. And sure, there's certain moments where we see him, like, get a little agitated, but again, that's after, like, several, you know, attempts at her trying to really push his buttons. And I actually really like the way he communicates with her, but I think it just doesn't work for them either. And so the other thing is, like, you know, we obviously don't have the footage from either of these fights because we don't have, like, the Uber footage or, my bad, the Lyft. But, like, there were Kyle and Jesse and West in the car the first time, and, like, they didn't see it. We also have Danielle talking about how she's trying to stay out of the situation and not get involved. So she's literally just, like, goes to the pool to sit by herself while the rest of the crew are, like, talking about Carl and Lindsay the next morning. And I think that's actually really huge growth for Danielle, who normally gets super involved in their fights. Carl basically tells the camera that he doesn't care that Lindsay drinks. He cares that her behavior changes when she drinks. And I feel like that makes a lot of sense, right? Because if she didn't get so agitated and activated, as she would say, and aggressive with him, it wouldn't really matter, right? It wouldn't affect his sobriety. But the fact that she becomes that way with him, it affects their relationship. And then Jesse says the funniest thing, because he's, like, new to the group. He's like, so, Carl, like, you've known her all these years, and she's always been like this? And Jesse's like, or Carl's like, I mean, yeah, at times she can be like this. And Jesse sort of tells the camera, like, he can't imagine that this is supposed to be how it goes for an engaged couple, but it sounds miserable, right? It kind of does, because, you know, this is not where you're supposed to be at this point in time. So Lindsay goes outside to have coffee, and Carl is like, can I get the door for you? And she says, I got it, thanks. And then he, like, slams the door behind her. So we did see that. We did see this little moment of Carl getting a little bit aggressive. But again, he is a person, right? We all have our moments. And he is in a point right now where he's pissed, right? It happens. So Lindsay goes outside to talk to Amanda, and she explains that they get in, like, these conflict patterns. And she says that Carl is always questioning her alcohol intake. So she feels like if he's going to question her, then she's going to question him about what he's doing. And Amanda's like, yeah, but, like, you do keep talking about him doing drugs. And that's, like, a sensitive word for him. And Lindsay says she brings it up because she finds it hypocritical. Okay, but, like, Lindsay, you can't bring up something just because you find it hypocritical if the thing you are using to attack him is his disease. Like, if someone I loved kept throwing my eating disorder in my face, I definitely wouldn't be with them anymore. So, like, she said, like, if he's going to judge me for drinking alcohol, then why can't I judge him for smoking weed? And I think, like, the difference is the reaction, like Carl said. Like, Lindsay is a monster when she drinks, sober too, but weed doesn't make you a monster or aggressive. Weed makes you, like, calm, right? So, you know, I'm just trying to figure out my dog here. She's sitting on my lap, and she's not really sitting on my lap. She's trying to organize herself on my lap. So sorry for the noises. But, like, the way that she describes him to be when he's, like, on something is not, you know, this way she describes him, where he's, like, a monster and aggressive and mean. You know, that's just not the typical symptoms one would have when they have smoked some weed. So I don't really feel like it's a tit-for-tat situation, necessarily. And I feel like she's trying to get Amanda to agree that it's hypocritical, but she said that, like, maybe she just needs to be clear with him, and then Lindsay's like, I am clear with him, and Amanda's like, you know, she's really trying here, and she's like, but you guys can't fight every weekend you come to the house. There's something underlying. And Amanda says in front of the group that Kyle has been a great husband this weekend, so I thought that was really sweet. everyone's sitting around the pool, and then the guys are sort of just sitting around to talk, and Carl tells the guys that he slept in the downstairs bedroom, and he said that after dinner he was, you know, as he tells the story again, he was so tired, so he wanted to go home, and Lindsay said she would go home with him. They got into a lift, and he was trying to talk to her calmly, and she was like, "You're fighting with me, you're trying to make this an issue," and she started swearing, and then she goes into, "What do you want, what do you want?" And he said, "I'm dead sober," and she called him a liar. And Carl literally tears up in the scene and says, like, "I'm gonna cry talking about it," which is so, like, literally heartbreaking to watch a scene like that, where he literally is talking about crying about the way his fiance is treating him. And he said that he's worked hard to be where he's at now, and 2 weekends in a row she's accused him of being on drugs, and he talks about how it just goes so south so quickly. Then he does start getting into a little bit about her drinking, and he says that she has 3 glasses of rosé after Barry's before they even get back to the house. I mean, I probably, for Carl's best interests, maybe he shouldn't be with someone who isn't also sober, right? I mean, and it's not even just like Lindsay isn't sober, she drinks quite heavily. So, you know, obviously this is going to have an impact on their relationship. And it seems like they keep fighting about the same sort of thing. And again, I'm so confused about that, given the fact that they are in therapy, right? So they just seem so poorly able to communicate with each other, like something I've never been able to see in my life. And it's just bizarre for two people who should technically be actively working on their communication, because they have almost like a guide, right? That's what a therapist is for. Oh, don't bark, sweetie. Sorry, my dog is getting a little antsy. So Gabby tells the camera that it's shitty at best to accuse someone of compromising their sobriety, and Gabby is, like, her closest friend in the house, right? Then we have, like, a quick talk between Kyle and Amanda says that, you know, their communication is, like, getting a little better. Kyle says the same thing, and he actually says that he respects how much Carl and Lindsay are doing to work on their communication. LOL. And Amanda agrees that they have been working on it, but Kyle says that, like, he would like to give couples therapy another try, and Amanda says that it's just not for her right now. She said, "Catch me on a good day and I'll say yes." So this is actually where she's losing me, because I was on her side this whole time, right? I was like, this man is not communicating with her correctly. He's saying stupid stuff about her ability to parent, her ability to be ready to be a parent. And now he's like, okay, like, let's work on our communication. And she's like, no. And I'm not really sure if this is, like, part of her laziness, or if she's, like, anti-therapy, but, like, he's taking a practical step to work on the relationship, and she's saying no, so I'm just confused. Would love to still stay on Amanda's side, though, so I'm gonna just have to see how that goes and just figure that out. So then we finally have Lindsay and Carl talking about what happened. Lindsay says that she not once accused him of doing drugs, and he said, "You did. You accused me of smoking weed." And Carl says that you said you were on something, and Lindsay said that he shut down at the restaurant. And he said, "I'm a sober guy, and I was tired, and I didn't want to go out, and I don't think that involves you starting a fight." And she's like, "It's not really communicative. It's like, it becomes really aggressive." He said that she is the one being aggressive, raising her voice, swearing, telling him he's on something. And Lindsay said that, like, you know, if you smoke weed, then, like, why is that hurtful to you? And he says, because he wasn't high at all last night. He said that he was upset that she wasn't taking any responsibility. And the difference here is that when he speaks on her sobriety, he speaks on it as an authority, because she has, in fact, been openly drinking. Like, you can literally count the number of drinks. That's the difference than accusing someone of something you didn't see. So she says, like, how can it be okay for you to judge me for drinking, and I can't ask you if you smoked weed? And he says, "You did ask, and when I answered you, you called me a liar," right? So again, like, going back to last week where Lindsay admits to the camera that she at no point ever thought that he was on anything, she's now saying it again for another weekend in a row. And when he answers her, fine, Lindsay, if you want to be a person who wants to be able to ask the question, fine. But then you're calling him a liar, and you have no basis to believe that he has smoked weed. So I just, you know, we've seen Lindsay activated in fights, we've seen Carl calm in fights, but this time, like, when it has to do with his sobriety, I feel like he has every right to get upset, and he is getting a bit upset in this moment, but I feel like, again, that's very justified. Logically, it doesn't make sense that he would be so angry at her for no reason in the car. Like, it makes more sense that he was tired and acting less engaged, and she took that as him being mad at her, and that is what seems like a lot more likely to have happened. Like, it's wild that they have two different sides of the story, like, both times. Amanda goes to talk to Carl, and Carl says he's at a loss. He doesn't know, like, what happened, but, like, the way she interprets things is, like, different, and she turns it into something else that didn't happen, and Amanda's like, yeah, well, you know, like, we've all felt that way in arguments with Lindsay before, and Carl's like, yeah, but, like, before when I was with her, I would notice that, but as a lover and a partner, like, it's not easy. And again, I'm just, like, so confused as to why these two people are so bad at communicating when they have been in therapy for over a year. So then Lindsay cries to Gabby that she can't have everything in her relationship, like, on her, and Gabby tells her, and this is really interesting, so Gabby says that it actually is on her to know what her partner needs in terms of communicating with him. It's on her to know how to communicate with her partner in a way that he is going to understand. And I really liked that and thought that that was really true. And then she continues to cry and says that no one understands, and she just feels like she's constantly being judged. And Gabby's saying what we're all thinking, like, how are you getting married in a few months, right? I don't know. So Lindsay walks out of the house with her bag to the front gate, and that's how it ends. I'm actually going to play you guys a clip from Carl on Watch What Happens Live, because I just feel like he gave us some additional information here, and instead of putting stuff to this week in News of the Week, all of the news was basically associated with the episodes or the shows that we're watching, or sorry, that I'm recapping today, so I just figured I would attach it to that. So I'll just play you this clip from Carl on Watch What Happens Live after last week's episode of Summer House.
Do you regret ending your engagement with Lindsay while cameras were rolling?
I mean, I don't know how to answer that, honestly. I mean,
it's a yes or no question.
I don't regret anything the way it went down. I actually think it was the best decision for the both of us to not move forward with the wedding.
You have said that Lindsay's drinking was just one layer of ending your engagement. What do you think the number one glaring reason why you decided to end things was?
We were not on, I think a wedding is to celebrate your relationship, and there were foundational things that were not stable to move forward with a lifetime of marriage. I didn't believe in that. So we were not, I mean, I believe in having a stable relationship before you celebrate a wedding, and we were not in that position, I believe, to move forward with the wedding.
Do you feel like your search to find yourself and your new career impacted your relationship?
I mean, I think career and finances are always a big part of relationship dynamics. For me, yeah, I was in kind of a transitionary point. You know, I'm in a position now where I am going after those things that she was concerned about and in the career fact. I got a lot going on for me with my career, so I'm pretty excited about that, and I'm kind of free from some of the things she was holding me back from.
If you had to assign a percentage about who was at fault for the breakup, what would it be?
I mean, I think we're both equally responsible for
50-50
for our role in it.
After she accused you of being on something on the show, what did you think of her Instagram apology where she said she was just confiding in a friend?
I mean, I'm blocked by her on social media, so I didn't actually see it directly.
Okay.
I was sent it. It was a very difficult situation all summer. I'm proud that I'm 3 years sober from alcohol and cocaine and several other substances. It's unfortunate, you know, to kind of have to relive it all, but I'm just trying to offer grace and compassion because we've all said crazy things. But I know in my heart of hearts, you know, I'm really proud of where I've been and how I'm living my life. And I'm continuing to grow and trying to become a better version of myself.
Are you starting to date again?
I haven't started yet. It's for me watching myself in a relationship. It's kind of confusing and hard to kind of separate that from right now. But I'm hoping, you know, the next few months to get out there. I'm just taking time for myself right now, focusing on my career and my family.
All right. Thank you very much.
So I think he handled that pretty, you know, professionally, and, you know, it was really nice of him to say that they were 50-50% at fault for the relationship ending. He was on with Trishelle from The Traitors, and she had made a comment like, you know, did you really have to end the engagement on television? That's still the part I'm struggling with. And Carl's like, basically, like, pulls a Denise Richards and is like, did you watch the show? Like, have you watched the episodes? And she's like, yeah, I know. And he's, you know, basically explains, like, you know, there was no, that it was not his intent when, you know, they had gone into having that conversation that they were going to break up. And he concurs again that, you know, they were not meant to be together. So that is definitely the end of Summer House for the week and the end of Carl and Lindsay.
How many sandwiches have you made for me?
Okay, so let's get into Vanderpump Rules. Now, after taking some time after last week's episode to just listen to some other podcasts and just get some other feedback and thoughts, I've sort of changed my tune on Lala, and I guess the trajectory of the show, and I guess just sort of my opinions going forward. So, you know, at first my belief was like, you know, Lala is out here riding for Sheena, trying to protect her and all of that. But a lot of people are making comments that really what the strife that we're seeing between the girls here is more about the show and not so much about the friendships. It's not so much about, like, you know, wanting to be friends with Sandoval. It's more so, how are we going to continue filming this show? And I do remember, I don't remember where exactly I saw it. It was a podcast and it was with Alex Baskin, where he had said something like, it came to a point pretty early on in production of season 11 where he had to sit them all down, get them all in a room together and be like, how are we supposed to film? How are we supposed to do this? So because of that, it makes sense to me why Lala is pushing so hard to get Ariana to sort of like agree to allow Sheena to be in the same vicinity as Sandoval. That makes sense. But then, and it also makes sense why Ariana would continue to defy that, because she does not want to be around her ex. But then I'm a little then confused as to where Katie is, because Katie is being obviously ride or die for Ariana. But if their boss basically sat them down and said, you know, you gotta film with this guy for the show, I'm just surprised that Katie's fighting so hard for the other side when, you know, she's an employee on the show as well. And that's why I just want to get some more information there. And I hope we can get some more interviews from her and just a little more context into where she's sort of coming from, if that is what's going on here in terms of all of this strife. So regardless, we do start off with a nice dinner between Katie and Lala. Katie admits that she hit below the belt, and Lala tells the camera that they were ride or die, but they fit into each other's lives in like a different way now. Lala says that she's trying to get soft and heal from trauma, but Katie is sort of happy on her warpath. And that was sort of interesting wording that I thought she used when she said that she's trying to get soft and heal from trauma. I feel like that's exactly what Sheena's trying to do, or the way that Sheena is trying to explain it. And so I feel like that's sort of why they're so on the same page when it comes to, you know, how to proceed in this matter. Lala says she's working to, like, drop what happened with her in terms of, like, her own trauma. And she says that her intent when she brings up stuff about her experiences is never to make it about her. And Katie says it can be perceived that way. Lala says that, you know, Lala asks Katie if she could be softer with her, and Katie says yes. And Lala says that she's worried that they will say something to each other just to be hurtful and there won't be any coming back from it. And that's what I'm sort of worried about in terms of the reunion. So basically, here's the tea that we've heard from the reunion. Let me just play you a clip from Radio Andy.
It went until something happened at the end, which I'll tell y'all closer to the time. And we wound up then, it wound up adding a big chunk of time to it. And I will say this, there are two kinds of reunions that I in my experience, the kinds of reunions that when I leave the taping, I either want to engage the producers more about it, and I, on the way wherever I'm going, I immediately am on the phone with producers, and occasionally I'm texting cast members. Maybe the next morning I check in on some people, see how they're doing or what they thought, or the total converse where I just want to go home, have a tequila, listen to music, and forget about the entire affair. This was one that I was wanting to engage in. Talk to Alex Baskin on the way home, talk to Lisa Vanderpump, was really kind of doing rounds a little bit because there was so much to talk about, and it was compelling.
So I don't know, that's really interesting. That implies that, okay, so something big happened. Word on the street that is that they had to extend the time because there was a huge fight between Ariana and Lala. So I'm very curious to see what happens with that. And I'm guessing it also involves Katie because she said that something happened at the reunion that has, you know, never happened before. She said that on Bravo TV. So, you know, it's just interesting that this scene was just being filmed where Lala says, you know, I'm worried something will happen where we can't come back from. And, you know, that may have happened at the reunion between her and Ariana. It also may have happened between her and Katie. And then Logan Cochran, who's like besties with Ariana, said something like, only Katie and Ariana are going to get to the pearly gates, basically like the only ones who aren't going to hell after the reunion. So that's basically the tea that we have from the reunion so far. But back to the episode. So Tom has like a pool party at the house, and Ariana's calling it his sexy singles party. Schwartz is basically so nervous about being there and says he feels weird and he leaves pretty much like immediately. And Tom so basically invites these random girls and he tries to flirt with them, but it's super cringe. He tells them that he'll be married by next year, knowing him. Not sure what he's talking about because he's never been married. Don't really know what he means there. He asks the girls if they've ever been to Burning Man. Like, this is his attempt at, like, flirting with these women. But I'm also, like, curious as to, like, where these women came from. Like, so he invited them, but, like, who are they? Where did he meet them? How did he get them to agree to film? Did they know what the show was? Because they're acting like they think he's a creep. So I'm curious how he got them to agree to come on the show. But anyway, he tries to make this joke about calling Ariana his ex-roommate and, like, how he puts chips under the door to feed her and keeps her in a locked room. Like, it's absolutely wild that he makes this joke because these girls are, like, absolutely not having it. So we see poor Anne cleaning up this gross mess the next morning and, like, you know, again, just standing in over here. We stan Anne here. Anne is looking for a job and just, you know, reach out to Anne if you have any sort of employment that isn't related to cleaning up Sandoval's gross mess. So Sheena comes over to talk to Ariana and basically they're talking about, like, their relationship and Ariana's explaining, like, I heard you were mad at me, and basically Lisa was the one who communicated with Ariana about Sheena being upset about Dancing with the Stars, and the way she communicated it was, like, I guess, like, differently than the way, like, Sheena would have communicated it. And we see, like, Ariana saying to Lisa, like, so she should have, like, I should have just, like, breached my NDA then. So Sheena expressed that, like, Dancing with the Stars is something that she's always wanted, but, like, she wished she had heard it from Ariana herself. And Ariana was sort of like, but I felt like if you're not telling me things in the moment, it makes me feel like there's people you feel more comfortable with talking about stuff than, like, me. And, you know, Sheena says that Ariana used to be her person, but lately talking to her has been more difficult and she hasn't been, like, super receptive with her feelings. So Sheena says the thing that we've heard Sheena say a few times now, that she misses her friend of 14 years, and that's the person that she misses. And Ariana says the thing that we've said, or that we've seen her say a few times now, that, you know, so many things come up in her mind that when you think of missing a person like this, that all the negative stuff, all the insidious stuff starts to come out even when the positive memories of him pop up. And for Ariana, you know, it makes her feel like Sheena says that she misses that person, right? And Sheena asks Ariana how she would feel if years from now Tom, you know, does the work and is a changed man and she wants to be friends with him again. And Ariana tells the camera she just believes Sheena just wants to be friends with Tom again. And I completely concur. I mean, like, we've been saying this for weeks. That's literally what is happening here. Just say it with your whole chest, as Katie would say. I want to be friends with Sandoval. Just say it. But Ariana tells her, I would be, like, side-eyeing you, like, you're in danger, girl. But, like, it would be more than that. More than, like, you're in danger, girl. You wouldn't be friends with her anymore. And I think if it's going to be that extent, where if it's going to be years from now, you know, answer the question, right? Like, if you're not going to be friends with her, if he continues to do the work and becomes a completely changed person, which is fair if she doesn't want Sheena in her life because she chooses to be friends with Tom once he's, you know, become the best. That's her prerogative as well, but I think she should be honest about that. Then we see Schwartz and Joe going for a walk, and I really just hate any of these scenes because I find them so weird, awkward, cringy, the robot noises, like, all of this stuff. Schwartz tells the camera he could have been happy with Joe, but he just, like, doesn't want that right now. Joe tells, like, a turtle story, and honestly, I'm appalled that this girl is getting more screen time than Katie. Like, it's just bizarre to me. So then everyone goes to the Belmont, and I'm not really sure what this scene is about, but Katie and Ariana show up, and I remember this scene from last summer of Tom sort of, like, flipping around and, like, looking Ariana up and down as she walks in, and Lala just almost freaking out that Ariana's there, and now we are actually seeing the scene where the reason Lala's freaking out is that Ariana, like, that she is, like, shown up, right? So, you know, Lala's like, oh my god, you actually showed up, like, this is, and so maybe this is the episode where, or, like, the first episode after Alex Baskin did sit them all down to be like, how are we gonna move forward, and maybe Ariana was like, okay, like, I'll come to this event, right? And maybe this is how it gets started. Allie tells the girls that Joe wants her to do her birth chart. Katie said that Joe had sent her a text saying, like, I respect you and I love you and support you after she had gotten divorced from Schwartz. But then a few months later, she's living with Tom Schwartz. Then we see Sheena and Tom talking. I'm sorry, guys. My dog is barking. Give me one sec. Sorry about that, guys. Back to business. So Sheena goes over to Tom, and she says that he owes Katie an apology. She says that he used to live on this moral high ground, and it's not just about the affair, that he needs to apologize for other things. She says, like, you've burnt a lot of people, and if you can just take your ego out of it. And he's like, I'm tired of being the scapegoat, which is the same thing we keep hearing him say constantly. And James starts, like, yelling at him, and he's like, you're making it worse, and then he ends up just leaving. You know, I do still feel like he owes a bunch of people an apology, like, especially Katie. But anyways, we have a scene of Sheena and Brock talking about parenting, and so basically Brock wants a consistent nanny because he wants to be able to get a job, and he wants to have a consistent schedule. And then Sheena's basically firing back, like, I've told you we don't have consistent schedules. And she's telling him she doesn't like him right now. And he's saying that, like, he's hoping that she will come around because, like, he just wants, you know, for his career, it's hard for him to do that without a schedule, and having a nanny will help with that regular schedule. So, you know, I have been sort of supportive in the things that Brock has been saying this season, but the way he's been communicating it, except for this episode, I feel like he did it okay, but the way he's sort of been yelling at her, I feel like I haven't mentioned previously, but I want to mention now, not okay. You know, and I feel like maybe he should be going with her to therapy so he can get a better understanding of her OCD and how it affects her parenting, because it just doesn't really seem like he has a full understanding. So Katie goes over to Ariana's house, and Tom is there, and so Tom gives her an apology. He says, you know, he's sorry for the way he acted during her divorce. Katie told him to stop explaining himself and basically to move differently, and she said that it's giving audacity to have a pool party living in the same house with Ariana, and I love that. It's giving audacity. And, you know, that's basically what we get from them. And that's basically all I think we're gonna get between Tom Sandoval and Katie, because there's no reason for them to ever speak again, right? There's basically no reason for him to ever have a conversation with her. They have no other relationship. Then we have a scene of the Toms talking, and Tom saying that, like, Rachel cutting him out, you know, was really hard on him. It sort of comes in waves, and him journaling and not drinking was his way of trying to connect with her because he knew that she was journaling and wasn't able to drink. And we've heard him say this before, not necessarily the journaling, but the drinking. And he says it breaks his heart that they won't be together. And Schwartz tells him, like, you know, you never know. And I don't think he should say that because, yeah, that's definitely not happening. And then he just starts, like, randomly crying over this. And, like, I don't know. I just don't have a lot of sympathy when it comes to Tom, when it comes to Rachel, because, again, like, after listening to her podcast and all the horrifying things he put her through during the time they were together, as well as the period of time that she was in therapy, I just can't. But then he says, like, he's being treated like Scott Peterson, and this is just, like, another random reference he has used to compare his situation. There's, like, a whole list. I feel like somebody online had made this meme, I can't remember who, of, like, all the different people that Sandoval has compared Scandoval to. So then Ariana has a bunch of her friends over for drinks and games, and the Toms, like, are there because they're, like, upstairs. So they come downstairs, they say hi, and they leave, and it's, like, super awkward. So everyone's basically playing Never Have I Ever, and so it's, like, a whole bunch of different questions about, like, orgies and different things like that. But then Allie reads hers and says, like, never have I ever dropped my pet off in the middle of nowhere because I didn't want it anymore. I'm like, no way. Like, that cannot be the question. Like, she turned it around to show, but, like, I need to see that. Like, that cannot be the question. That just seems so mean. Like, no. Like, what are the odds of that? Did production make the game of Never Have I Ever? Like, did they, like, put that card in the deck? Because, like, no. Somebody tell me, somebody reach out to me in the DMs if you've ever seen a card that says that in a pack of Never Have I Ever. Just super curious. So then Tom and Tom meet up with the guys at Tom Tom. And so it's Tom, Tom, Brock, James, and Schwartz is telling the guys that about Joe and that he had a whirlwind romance with her last summer, but now he doesn't want anything. Allie, in the meantime, is reading Joe's birth chart and tells her that she and Schwartz are basically just more of, like, a friendship bond, and she looks so disappointed. But, like, no matter how much, like, she wants it, like, it's just not written in the stars, Joe. And, like, she posted this long diatribe confessing, like, her undevoted, like, appreciation of his friendship the other day. And she does it a lot. She posts those sorts of things a lot, and people were commenting things like, he's not gonna see this, or he didn't comment on it. She's like, I don't care. And people are like, he has a girlfriend. She's like, maybe, right? Like, it's just, it's cringy. It's really cringy to watch. Schwartz says that Katie has, like, Katie had a problem with Joe, which Sandoval says is, like, not cool. And Joe tells Allie that, you know, she's friends with the girls, but she wants her to feel welcome. Because, you know, at the end of the day, Allie is a nice person. And Joe tells Allie that it wasn't okay that the girls called her, like, an anorexic, druggy whore. And to have her mom call her and, like, ask her if she's on drugs. Like, that wasn't okay. And, yeah, I mean... Okay, so Joe is weird, and yeah, we can't disagree with that here. Like, we've seen some weirdness in this girl, but at the same time, she doesn't deserve to be called the things that she was called because she's not a bad person at the end of the day. She hasn't done anything to anybody. So then we have the moment we've all been waiting for. Jax Taylor walks into the building, and it wasn't as, like, you know, exciting, as I guess, as we all thought it would be, or as, like, you know, this monumental moment. But basically, Tom said that Jax has always felt some sort of competition with him, which is unfortunate because they were best friends. Jax tells Tom that he saw, like, pictures of him on social media and he's looked so old. I love that. Tom says, like, yeah, you can't shut up about the affair. You're talking about me constantly. And yeah, in all fairness, I mean, Jax and Brittany basically started When Reality Hits out of Scandoval. I mean, there was other people who definitely did episodes about Scandoval, but, like, people like Sheena and Lala had their podcasts well before that. The birth of When Reality Hits was Scandoval-based. I do have to agree there. Tom was saying, it must be humbling to only have something interesting to say when it's about me. And Jax was like, the whole world is talking about you. You need to humble yourself. And again, so funny to hear coming from Jax. Tom says that he does not owe Jax anything, and Jax calls him a disgrace. And that's basically the episode. And I loved having the scene. I love getting the hypocrisy, because that's what's interesting about it, right? Like, that's, I don't think Jax realizes that's why people wanted him back for this scene, to watch someone who had literally done the same thing yell at someone who had done the same thing, right? It's glorious TV. So then we have the VPR after show. So I'll just go over this quickly. Sheena talks about her longtime love, Dancing with the Stars. She said she was happy with Ariana, just not happy about how she found out about it. And this was an interesting tidbit. So apparently Tom had apparently wanted to do Dancing with the Stars as well, and had been taking dance classes for a long time because it was a dream of his too. I'm not sure why this is everybody's lifelong dream. Apparently Ariana did not tell Katie about Chicago. That's what Lala said on the after show. But it's not clear if Katie was upset about that, because it's not brought up in the after show. But Brittany says that everyone was upset about it. But I'm like, who is everyone? Lala then throws, like, some major shade and said it when it comes to, like, something about her, it's like Schwartz and Sandy's 2.0, and Ariana is Sandoval and Katie is Schwartz, because Ariana went off and has been doing her own thing. And that is, like, really harsh. And I just feel like, again, this is the kind of thing that's going to come up at the reunion and is going to just going to explode, which, again, cannot wait to watch. Ariana explained that, you know, there was a rumor that had come out that she was doing with Dancing with the Stars. And when that rumor came out, it wasn't official. She hadn't signed anything. And when Dan had brought it up to Sheena, that's when it was actually official. Sandoval said that he didn't watch any of her dances. Schwartz said that he did watch and voted for her despite her blocking him. Tom explains that the pool party wasn't like, you know, let's have some girls over. It was like people and some girls, he said. So it wasn't girls, it was people and some girls, because he wanted to meet new people, and he wouldn't care if Ariana did either. Ariana said it was pathetic. The producer asks if Schwartz gets any brownie points for leaving early, and Ariana's like, yeah, sure. But then Katie's like, no, why? Because he has one moment of clarity that doesn't mean anything. But Ariana gave him a little bit of grace. And then Jack says it's his understanding that Tom owns the house and pays for everything, and Ariana is doing quite well, so she can get an Airbnb if she's that upset. Again, with this house. Okay, why does Ariana need to leave the house? I feel like we don't talk about this enough. I mean, sure, we talk about the house all the time and Ariana being asked to leave it, but we're not talking about Tom leaving the house enough. Like, why does Tom not have to leave the house? We have already been explained to now that Ariana only had $2,000 in the bank. She said she is not rich and she does not have millions of dollars. She has said that, like, you know, she, at March 1st, she couldn't have just been expected to leave. So it just seems really confusing, again, about this, like, house situation, and I think that Ariana would be pretty upset to hear what Jack said here. And then Tom goes into this whole, like, Ariana blaming thing, where he says that she's had, like, a bunch of parties until late in the morning when she knew he had work the next day. Work? What do you do for work, Tom? what do you get up early in the morning and do there, Tom? A little bit curious. He says that he went down there after, like, the fifth night in a row one time, and he, like, told people that he would, like, unplug the TV that he bought. Scary threat there, Tom. Ariana said that Tom is disrespectful all the time, but that's just, like, what's expected of him, so people don't even seem, like, shocked by his disrespectful behavior, because we're just like, yeah, that's Tom. Schwartz says that he's now in this stage of, like, where he'd like to talk about an ex on a date, and he said he would love to hash that out. Jack says that there should be this thing in marriage where you should, like, re-up after 10 years without having, like, lawyers involved and stuff, and be like, do we still want to do this, do we not? These three guys are literally three walking red flags, and that is why these three men are, like, pretty much single right now. It's just, I can't. Jack said that marriage is so different now, and his dad worked all the time, and he only saw his dad on weekends, and, like, this side-eye from Sandoval was, like, such a hilarious moment. It was, like, a true LOL. Brock talks about, like, his threesome days. I didn't really care about that too much. Sheena talks about her Hollywood days. Kristen talks about this girl at Sir who wanted to help her and Tom, like, fix things, like, way back in their relationship days. So she would, like, flirt with Kristen, but then Tom wanted to end up only hooking up with her, and Kristen said no. So everybody's just sort of telling these stories. Then we have Katie talking about the Joe text, and she said that basically her whole thing was just him moving in with him was weird when they were going through a divorce. And Schwartz, you know, said it all sort of started when they became really good friends after she cut his hair. Kristen explains a little bit more about her history with Joe, because as you know, like, Joe was friends with Kristen. That's how she became known to the group. She explains that she had first heard about Joe and Schwartz after she had just moved into her new apartment, which is in Katie's same building. She said that basically Joe just started ghosting Kristen when they had used to see each other 4 days a week. Katie called her and said that she saw girls' stuff, Kristen, meaning Katie called Kristen and said that she saw girls' stuff in Tom's bathroom when they were filming, and that's, you know, the first time she had heard about it. Kristen had no idea. So she tries to talk to Joe about it. She had also had a brand new 2-bedroom apartment, so she didn't understand why, like, Joe wouldn't ask to move in there. And then she also said that she had a lot of friends who at the time were seeing, like, Joe, Raquel, Tom, and Tom hanging out quite often. So it seemed to be, like, quite the double date situation. And that's basically all she knew on that. Katie said that her conversation with Sandoval showed that he had no introspection, which obviously true. She said that she doesn't blame him for the ultimate dissolution of her marriage to Tom. And Schwartz basically said the same thing. He said the bar was a big part. Katie said that though Sandoval has a negative viewpoint of her, though, that impacted Schwartz's viewpoint of her, and that totally makes sense. Like, having a best friend who's constantly saying, like, terrible things about your wife in your ear is obviously going to sway your viewpoint. Sandoval said that in regards to Jax, he knew it would be, like, one bad conversation that he'd have to have with him, and then it would be fine after that. Jax says that he doesn't hold grudges and that he wouldn't, like, throw away their friendship for, like, this. But I'm confused by that, because hadn't they, like, not talked in years, and hadn't he, like, hated Tom anyway, and hadn't they, like, not been friends for years? Like, this had nothing to do with Ariana, so it's interesting that he's now being like, I'm not gonna throw this friendship away, we've been friends for a long time. But, like, you did throw it away. You only came back because of Scandoval. So that's weird. Jack says he was just feeling so bad for Schwartz and it all, and how he had to deal with so much with the bar and everything going on with Scandoval, and that's why he was so mad with Sandoval at the time. Sandoval said it's nice to see Ariana thriving and that it helps the situation. It does not, Tom. There's an argument amongst the group as to who's the number one guy in the group, as well as a conversation about poop, and I'm not going to go into either of those. And that is it for Vanderpump Rules and the Vanderpump Rules After Show.
I take sketch comedy very seriously, so it offends me when people just think that they can just do it.
Okay, let's get into the Valley. We have been waiting for this literally for years, guys. Or maybe you haven't, but I have, and I'm really excited about this show. I thought it was a pretty good first episode. I'm not gonna recap, like, the first, like, 10 minutes, because we've seen these same intros sort of over and over again. We've seen the trailer. I've talked about it on several different episodes where I've sort of explained the group, so I'm not gonna get into too much of that, but, you know, we don't get a ton here because, you know, it's an opening episode. We're just getting to know the characters. So I'll just kind of go over it briefly and maybe a little bit more when it comes to the characters that we know in particular. So Brittany talks about, you know, so we've got Jax and Brittany back, obviously, Jax Taylor and Brittany Cartwright. And I've mentioned this before on a couple of episodes that what's going to be interesting about watching this show is that we never actually got to see Jax and Brittany married because they got married in season 8 of the show, and shortly after, they didn't come back because they didn't come back for season 9. So we never actually got to see their marriage play out. So we're going to definitely be seeing that. In terms of news of the week, there's definitely some stuff for the Valley, so I'm just going to, you know, throw that in here as opposed to, like I said, having a news of the week section. But basically, you know, as you guys know, Jax and Brittany are separated. Brittany has now confirmed that she's been living separately since January 24th. She's been living in an Airbnb. And she has said that she's asked Jax to do four little things. She's not said what all those four things are, but one of them is go to therapy, and she said he has not gone to therapy. And, you know, it's not some, like, big cheating scandal. It's not some big, like, crazy thing that we all need to figure out what it is. She said that, like, basically they get in, like, these really hardcore fights, and she also, they talked about this on their podcast last week as well, on When Reality Hits, as well as in the media, that they get in, like, these really bad fights, and it's affecting her mental health in a really big way, and that she just can't go on like this, and that he can't expect her to go on like this. So that's what they're fighting about. That's what their marriage is. Struggles are about, and so we're definitely going to see that play out. But anyways, Brittany Cartwright talks about her, like, turkey neck surgery or whatever she has it calls it. She calls, like, turkey gobble or whatever, so she has that done. Jax is talking about how he's at this point in his life where he's sort of doing it all. He's an influencer, podcaster, father. He's going to open a bar. Kristen explains where she is now. She says that she used to own a home in Valley Village, and that was when she was dating her ex, Alex. So we never saw too much of Kristen with Alex because she started dating him, not in season, and so we only got to see him on, I believe, the season 8, or sorry, we didn't get to see him at all, but she was dating him, I believe, when, it was the season 8 reunion, which was the COVID reunion, and she dated him for, like, a couple of years, and we don't really know too much about it because she wasn't on TV at the time. But she explains that he had urged her to sell her house and move in with him, and then they broke up a bunch of times over 5 months, and she ended up in an apartment. And then Kristen introduces us to Luke, her wonderful boyfriend Luke, who's also on the show with her. She said that she met him 2 weeks after her breakup with Alex. She met him at a wedding, and he was sweet and kind, and they had sex behind a tent, and the rest is history. And honestly, I just truly missed Kristen for just things like that. They show us a little piece of Nia and Danny, but we had already seen most of that in, like, other clips and trailers posted, and I think that's because they're, I don't mean to be mean, I just think they're very boring and have nothing going on, so we just don't really have a lot there. Then we have Janet and Jason, who I believe are going to be my most favorite couple because I already love Janet. There's a little bit of tea on this week, so Janet, as I've mentioned on previous podcast episodes, has known Sheena for quite some time, and she's friends with many of the girls in the group, including Ariana and Lala. And so Sheena was on Juicy Scoop podcast with Heather McDonald this week, and she was talking about the Valley, talking about Janet. She said that they had a falling out sort of around COVID because there was, like, an inkling or, like, something about Janet possibly going to be having a threesome with Max and Dana, and that did not happen. I actually posted about this back in August when I was trying to introduce y'all to Janet because I knew she'd be on the Valley. And yeah, so there's, like, this clipped scene from, I think, like, the season 8, like, what do you call those episodes? Like, the Secrets Revealed episode where Sheena is having dinner with, like, Charlie and Dana and Janet, and Dana's asking Janet if she likes threesomes, and I don't know, I guess according to Sheena, like, it didn't happen, but, like, it caused, like, a rift, I guess, with her and Janet, but they've been all good now. I just think that's, like, a sort of bizarre and interesting story. So Janet and Jason have been together almost 4 years, married for one, and she's pregnant. Jason, I think, is going to be our new voice of reason. We've been told it twice in this episode that he is the voice of reason. Janet says that he's very passive and he's afraid of her because she can be so structured, and he knows that she would do great in prison. And I just feel like we're going to like her so much because I already just like her vibe. Like, she's so funny and she's just so on par with what we love about Vanderpump Rules. Then we move on to Jesse and Michelle. So Michelle and Jesse talk about, Michelle says that Jesse is very extreme in everything that he does, and I think we can see that a little bit from the trailer. They have a 3-year-old named Isabella, and Michelle says that she doesn't think that Jesse has ever had a pic of her on his phone as her screensaver. It's either the dog or the baby. And Jesse says, I work with you. Why do I have to open my phone and look at a picture of you? So, by the way, in terms of news of the week, Jesse and Michelle announced at the premiere party for the Valley that they are separated, which is something I've been speculating for quite some time and had mentioned in a couple different podcast episodes. I just assumed that they were keeping this quiet until the end of the season. I'm not sure why they announced it at the beginning, but, you know, this will be another relationship that we'll basically get to watch deteriorate as the season continues. And, you know, this is number one. I feel like we're starting to see crack number one right here. Jesse says they don't live in the valley because they, where they live screams ambition. I thought that was a super pretentious thing to say. Again, don't know this guy super well. Gonna get to know him. Gonna get to see more about him. Kristen goes to meet Zach and Jasmine for drinks, and she talks about how she has seen her friends over the past few years get married and have babies, and, you know, it's her turn. She wants it. She's the oldest in the group, and when is her time? Totally agree, and I'm so for it for Kristen. She says that she's hoping to get pregnant this summer, and Jasmine just sort of talks about how she didn't see it with Kristen and Luke because he seems pretty vanilla. But you know what? She says it in comparison to all these, like, chaotic relationships she's had in the past, and they show clips of, like, her with James and, like, him spitting on her door and all that stuff. But, like, maybe that's what Kristen needs, right? Like, maybe she's dated all of these men with this chaotic energy, which feeds her chaotic energy, which leads to explosions, and maybe she needs someone who is the opposite to that, right? Somebody who can calm her energy, someone who has that sort of, yeah, like, calming nature. And, you know, as vanilla as Luke is, he does seem to have that calming nature. Kristen says that Luke lives in Colorado full time, but he's decided to spend the summer in the valley because they are going to try to have a baby. We have a scene of Brittany and Cruz going to Nia and Danny's condo, and Michelle goes too. Brittany says that she wants to start trying to have a second baby in a month. Michelle says that she does 98% of the work. Again, red flag. Nia says that she's exhausted with a toddler and twins, and that Daniel actually wakes up all night and does every diaper change, which Daniel sounds like a really stand-up man, loving Daniel. And then Michelle says that Jesse never did that. Again, seeing the cracks. We have a scene of the guys going golfing, and so Luke's goes up to Jax and is like, so Jax, when are you going to unblock me? And it was actually so cringy because it felt so scripted. And, like, you know, Kristen told him to say that because it's like a Jax quip. Everybody knows that, like, Jax blocks everybody, right? But, like, it didn't land. And, like, love Luke. Love Luke for Kristen. But, like, not everybody's meant for reality TV. And Luke is definitely just not it. So Luke says that he's staying with Kristen for the summer, just as Kristen had explained. But 99% of his life is still in Colorado. And Jax is like, is it going to stay like that? And Luke says that he and Kristen are, you know, trying to take another step. And then we're back to Brittany, and she's saying that Jax does not like Luke at all. He acted like Luke didn't exist when they went to Mexico for Sheena's wedding, and they just weren't getting along. I know that Jax was actually pretty close with Kristen's ex, Alex, so maybe that has something to do with it. And, like, again, I know Luke is vanilla, but, like, he seems like an extremely nice guy, a nice, like, innocent guy, so that's awful, right? And this poor guy is, like, moved, you know, across the country to be with his girlfriend, to, like, enter this friend group. The least Jax could do would be, like, welcome him with open arms. Like, it's not fair of him to get mad that Kristen's relationships don't work out and that there's, like, another guy he has to meet, because, again, not Luke's fault, and he's a very nice guy. Jax says, you know, we just want to make sure Kristen is going to be okay, because, like, you know, having kids out of wedlock, that's a lot. You don't think about things like expenses, like school, health insurance, bills. Okay. Typical Jax. So, number one, nobody says out of wedlock anymore. That's a dated and offensive term. Number two, he doesn't even know what it means, because it just means having a baby, not being married. It doesn't mean being a single mom. He's describing being a single mom, right? Like, but regardless, even people who are married can break up and have to raise a child as a single parent, so planning has nothing to do with it, and he's being as Jax as ever. So Jesse says that from his experience, that having a kid can completely change the entire relationship. So yeah, we're definitely getting some information here onto what Michelle and Jesse's issues are. Then we have a scene of Brittany and Jax going over to Janet and Jason's. Jax, he seems to be pretty in love with Jason. He says that he calls him all the time for everything. He says that he loves Jason because he's a broad lawyer and he does what he calls lawyering. And Janet clarifies that what Jason does is that he's a workers' comp defense lawyer on the corporate side. And Janet says that Jax will attribute basically anything to Jason does to being a lawyer, like, oh, like, you open your mail on time, you know, like a lawyer would, when these are actually just traits of being an adult, but they're not traits of being a lawyer. Again, loving Janet. Brittany offers to have a pool party at her house for Janet's birthday, and I remember seeing pics of this filming from last summer. They're talking about Kristen and how she deserves to be a mother, or Brittany's saying that. She's like, she's already 40. And Jason says that Kristen would be a great mother, and he says, you know, he's the new voice of reason, so I think we gotta listen to him. Jack says that, well, like, Kristen was trying to get pregnant with Alex a week before they broke up. So basically they're expressing concern that maybe Kristen just wants to have a baby and it doesn't matter necessarily who with. Jack says that he feels this is going to be like an I told you so moment, and he says he's rarely wrong. And Brittany gets on his case about the fact that he believes himself to be rarely wrong. Then we have a scene of Jax and Brittany getting ready for the party. And this is like the first little bit, I guess, we see of Jax and Brittany getting in a little tiff. But Brittany's blowing up like this giant corn dog blow up thingy. And she asks Jax to do it. And he says he shouldn't have to do anything. Typical Jax. But also, like, you know, she's like, Jax, can you do this? And he's like, I don't know. I shouldn't have to do anything. So we're already starting to see them fight just like a little bit. So the party's like a country fair theme, which is really cute. And they have a tattoo artist come, and all the girls end up getting one for their kids, which I remember seeing at the time. It was super, super cute. We see Kristen and Michelle talking about Luke moving permanently. And she says that they are on the same page about having kids. Michelle says that, you know, she gives an example of how, you know, she was with Jesse for 8 years before they had kids. And they didn't even talk about basic things like how they wanted to parent. Crack, crack, crack in the foundation. Keep watching. Jesse tells Jax that he doesn't think Michelle has been happy and that they fight about little things. And then she had a baby and she transitioned as a mom and he didn't quite transition as a dad. And he says that that's where they're at. I actually find that super insightful. You know, it seems like he actually has a very good understanding of where their relationship is at and where the struggles have started to happen. It actually sounds like maybe they have tried therapy. I mean, we haven't gotten very much into their relationship, but, you know, I just thought that was really insightful for him to say. Like, he has a very good understanding of where the relationship has gone wrong. Jax talks to Lala. So there's, like, some crossover in this episode. We've got Lala, Sheena, and Brock at this party. Jax talks to Lala about Kristen wanting to get pregnant and says that she should take a page out of Lala's book, being a single mom, but he says it more than so, like, you know, take a warning page out of this book. Then he comes inside, he starts talking about it more. He's talking about it to Brock. He says, like, figuring out is not okay. And Brock is like, how did you figure it out? And Jax is like, we planned it. But, like, again, like, you cannot plan everything. And he goes into how there's, like, hidden expenses and all of this. But, like, yeah, again, there's hidden expenses for even if you plan it, right? So it doesn't really make sense. Sheena and Lala come to Kristen's defense, and they're like, you know, and then he has the nerve to say, like, he says to Kristen's face, do you think you're mentally there to have a child? And it's like, are you kidding, Jax? Like, are you mentally there? Like, isn't he the one who's always saying, like, something's wrong with his brain? So I just think that's a really offensive thing to say. Kristen is 40 years old. She's a woman who knows exactly what she wants. She's a woman who's been in therapy for many years. And she says she would be very happy if she were to get pregnant right now. She says that she learned from her last relationship was that she didn't want a baby with that person. And Jax starts going in. He starts losing his mind doing his little Jaxisms. And he's like, whoa, 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 whoa. A week before you guys broke up, you were trying to get pregnant. And Kristen's like, just because I don't tell you all the ins and outs of my relationship with my boyfriend doesn't mean that he and I didn't have those conversations. So basically she's saying, like, just because, like, you may have heard part of that doesn't mean that that was the entire conversation. But Jax always likes to really insert himself into situations, and maybe, again, because he has this really close personal relationship with Alex, he feels he can speak on that more, but he shouldn't. Kristen says she's hurt because she feels like they're family, and he's saying, like, he feels like it's a tough love situation, that he's worried about what would happen if they broke up. And she's like, he's like, did you think about that with, like, the last 5 guys you dated? And it's like, dude, Jax, like, and she's like, just support me and, like, be my friend. And, you know, I see what he's saying. I see that he's trying to, like, be supportive of her in the sense that he wants to make sure that she's ready. But, you know, to, again, like, this is with Summer House, to tell a woman when she is ready to have a child is a no, 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 no. And again, as a 40-year-old woman who's in a relationship with someone she's going to have the child with, it's literally none of your business, Jax. It is a conversation for Kristen and her partner. And unless she asks for your opinion or your advice, don't give it. That's my opinion. So then we have Jax going outside and decides to play a prank on Danny, and he pulls down Danny's shorts. Then Nia, his wife, goes inside and starts crying, and all the girls start gathering around her, and Britt starts apologizing for him. But the way Sheena is standing there and sort of smirking at how ridiculous Nia is for crying over this situation, while at the same time not realizing this is a totally Sheena move and this is something exactly that Sheena would do, was chef's kiss. Take a look at the scene, or watch your face. It was wild to watch. And then at the end, Jax gets dunked in the dunk tank, and I wish each episode could end that way, because that works for me. So As I've said before, guys, I'm really excited about this show. Let's give it a chance. We've been complaining about Vanderpump Rules, about it not having enough drama, about it not feeling organic. And what I've said to you guys before is what I think we've been missing all of this time are the drama that come with Jax and Kristen. And we're already going to see it, and I am just super excited. So let's keep watching The Valley, guys.
And that's God, what you
why
go
isn't
off
it about
on.
The damn pasta? Get over the damn pasta. Read between the f***ing lines. It ain't about the pasta. It's not about the pasta. It's not about the pasta.
Okay, guys, that's the end of the episode. Maybe that wasn't as short as I thought it would be, but thank you guys so much for hanging in there while I haven't been feeling my best self. I really appreciate it. You can listen to this episode as well as all my other episodes on Apple Podcasts. You can listen to them on Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow me on TikTok at The Bravo Investigator. You can follow me on Instagram at The Bravo Investigator and at I Take Bravo Very Seriously. You can also subscribe to my YouTube channel at I Take Bravo Very Seriously. And if you guys, you know, don't mind, if you haven't already left a review, please leave a 5-star review. I'd love it. I'd appreciate it. It would make my day. And until next time, keep taking Bravo very seriously.